Sit down and sofa, yeah? Sofa. Tired now. So many times it happens too fast. You trade your passion for glory. Don't lose your grip on the dreams of the past. You must fight just to keep them alive. It's deep. I am a tiger. It's the thrill of the fight. Rising up to the challenge of our rival. And the last known survivor stalks his prey in the night. And he's watching us all with the eye of a tiger. Face to face.
All right. Out of the heat.
Hanging tough, staying hungry. Face back the odds. Do we take to the street for the kill with the skill to survive? It's deep. I have the tigers, the thrill of the fight. Rising up to the challenge of our rival. And the last known survivor stalks his prey in the night. And he's watching us now with the eye of the tiger.
Where's the DJ? Oh, the DJ's there, the DJ's there. Welcome, everybody. I had to get my 5 minute punchy in for my exercising anyway, so I thought, like, I'll just do it at the same time. Actually, I'm not out of breath, which is very surprising. I will be by the end on the Zoom, though. So welcome, everybody. Hope everybody's well and dandy. We've got a fantastic lineup tonight, as per usual, adding lots and lots of value. So we've got Lee Gilder, our legal guy. So please get your questions ready. Free Zoom, free legal advice. Obviously, you've got to be insured for that, haven't you, Lee? So you can give your advice, but you'll have to get in touch with you for any documents and that. We've got Wayne, our finance expert. So Wayne's going to give us a quick update on finance stuff for our investments. And we've got the fantastic Rob Harrison, all things defects. And then we're going to go into a little deal that I've just helped somebody with and how that actually stacks up on the legal side and also with the finance side. And somebody's little baby's talking. If they want to talk, I'm trying to talk, but we're going to have to turn you off, I'm afraid. Let's have a little. And I think it's our Kerry McNichol. She'll have the little in on her knee. So, right, let's get cracking. How's everybody doing? Can we say a good hello to everybody?
Yeah, all good.
All good, fantastic, brilliant. So let's start. I think what's it? honestly, Zooms, honest to God. Oh. Rob, should we start with you and get straight on the defects, honey?
You can do, yeah, by all means. I will warn you, this could go horribly wrong.
It's not going to go horribly wrong. I'm out of the universe tonight and everything's going to go smoothly. So what do we need to do? Do we need to share your screen?
Hang on a minute then. Just bear with me for 2 seconds and I've got my instructions from Shirley how to do this, right?
Take your time.
But as you know, I've got form, right? So if I disappear, then I'll come back here at some stage.
I'm just going to mention as well. So me and Rob, Shirley, there's a group of us where we've done training with a company and we've really stuck together, and this is where you find your tribe, you find the people you can trust, your team, and anything to do with roofs or anything like that, we always get Rob out. One particular roof that I had on a property was in an area where I would say there was a bit social housing there, but a little bit private, and a lot of the roofs had been replaced. Now that was because it was with the social housing, maybe it's like Group 13 or Gentry or something like that. So a lot of the roofs in the area had actually been replaced. So when I had a leak, and you had, I think I must have had Rob five roofers out, because you know I'm like, I had five roofers out. I thought, we'll have to be able to find the problem and then I'll get Rob out as well. So the roofers were saying, need a new roof. As you can see on the estate, the roofs have been replaced. This needs a new roof. So when Rob came out, literally like a little property doctor, went in, identified the problem, 400 quid. So I remember it was a flashing, but was also something to do with the ridge tiles. Now, don't get us wrong, that roof's still not going to last for another 5 or 10 years, but I'm going to get another 2 or 3 years out of it. That's 5 grand in my pocket until it's ready. And touch wood, we've had no issues. So it's all about cash flow. And you know, if you don't need a new roof today, then you don't get a new roof today. But a lot of roofers, you know, just want to put a new roof on because that's what they do. Have we got any roofers actually on the Zoom? Any roofers on the Zoom? Because we're actually desperate for roofers. So I thought that that's quite one there. So yeah, and you also found a wasp's nest, didn't you? A big, massive wasp's nest, but it was dead. It was all dried up. But yeah, that was interesting. Things that you find in roofs. So,
So,
Rob, are you ready to rock and roll or not yet?
what can people see here? Can they see my jigsaw house?
No, not yet. But I think we're going to have to share your screen, aren't we, Jeff?
Oh dear.
Yeah, it's co-hosting, so you should be able to share his screen.
Just
Oh,
press
but
some chat. Do you know the little green arrow at the bottom?
share screen. Oh dear
Starting
me.
chat.
We've got a problem.
Terrible
Sorry.
in the morning.
There's nothing there because I'm ready to go here. But if you can't see mine, I don't know how to get back into. Oh God.
Share screen, Rob.
Sorry.
Bottom. On the bottom toolbar, if you look at the share screen, can you see that?
No, there's nothing there. I haven't got a toolbar at the bottom now.
Have you got a mouse? You can drag that down to the bottom. It should highlight the toolbar.
No, there's nothing there.
If you also press the screen as well, it should come up on your screen, the actual icons on the bottom.
It's not. It's not coming up.
Nope.
No.
Right, Jeff, are we down? I'm just going to try this to see.
Robbie, you want a PC or a Mac?
I'm on a Mac.
Oh, can't help you.
I'll tell you what, I'm going to get out of this and I might have to come back in again. So
Okay.
can you bear with me for 2 minutes?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, well, what we'll do is then let's get shall we get finance on? Wayne, are you all right to do a little bit on an update?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, Debs, I've prepared something on bridging. So if I go too long or go too short, let me know and I'll hop off whenever Rob's ready. Shall I square my screen now
Yeah. Do you want me to mention? Yeah. Okay, then, yeah. If you do that, because I wanted to mention the tenant that I've helped out and then you to talk about the legals and the finance on that as well with that lovely family
Oh.
where we needed a 4-bed, but now we don't because they're actually buying the property off the landlord, which is absolutely amazing. But go on then, Wayne, you do your bit.
Hang on a
Cracking.
second. I might be back.
Go on.
Can I try and share screen here for a second?
Yeah,
Yeah.
sure.
Okay.
It said it comes up at the top here, it says starting share screen will stop others' computer sound share. Do you want to continue? Yeah.
Yes, continue.
Right.
Please. Sorry, I didn't want
Aha.
to see there.
Aha. Hang on then.
Drum roll. On, let's put some
Well,
positive.
I'm trying it. I'm now asking. It says optimize for video clip, and it's not allowing me to share sound. Well, hang on a minute. I'll just try share. See what's up. There we go. Am I there?
Oh, we're nearly there, honey. We're nearly there. I tell
Well,
you
well done, Rob. Well
what.
bloody hell!
Wow. Wow. I tell
Don't.
you what, let's give Rob a big round of applause for that.
Hang on a minute. I'm not. I don't. I'm not there yet. I'm not there yet. Oh, God. Hang on a second. Because I've got a bar at the bottom across what I want to
See, Shirley's
do.
out dog training tonight. So, you know, Rob's just been left to get around, basically. Oh, and it won't let me. Oh. Are you admitting people at the same time, Jeff, are you? He's only in the room next door, you know. Come on, Rob. I'm Michael Swainson. Come on, Rob. Woohoo.
Oh, yeah.
We're on a roll here, right? Fingers crossed.
I got a second. Hold your horses. Right. I think, anyway. Right. Can you see me?
We can see you perfectly. Let's get cracking.
Champion. Right. Okay. Thanks. Thanks, Debbie. And good evening, everybody, eventually. What I was going to say is thanks very much. Thanks a bunch, Debbie, for she's dragged me kicking and screaming out of retirement to get involved with these Zoom meetings and just to share some of my knowledge that I've acquired over many years within the building industry, studying houses for defects. So, and I've seen a few names on there. So a few of you might know me, might have come across me over the past few years on other events or events similar to this one. As I say, my name is Rob. And I just have a passion for studying buildings. Although not so much how they're put together, although I study that as well, but just how and why they deteriorate if they're not looked after, and if they're not regularly maintained, just as and when a defect occurs. Therefore, I would just like to show you over the coming weeks, months perhaps, or you never know, even years, just how to maintain your house. This also then translates into what to look out for when you're viewing properties with the intention of buying. Yeah. So the examples that I'll be showing, they're mostly of houses that I've inspected myself, or for other property investors who have wanted me to check over a building before they've bid or before they bought it. Unfortunately, though, many of the houses that I go to see have already been bought, and they've been bought with.
Can that person mute their mic, please? Jeff, can you find out who it is and mute them? Or right, that's it.
Thanks, Debbie. I've got two things going on here. What I was just going to say is that a lot of the houses that I go to see have already been bought, often without enough knowledge of what to look out for when buying a distressed property anyway. And then I've just been asked for my opinion as to what the problem or the cause of the problem. And often that's too late. Sometimes, quite often, there's costly repairs which obviously weren't budgeted for on the original price. When I was deciding what to talk about tonight, I just thought about something that's been affecting all of us for the past 6 months, 9 months, especially. It just never stopped raining. And then there's been storm after storm after storm. I know I'm desperate for a nice warm summer. Although I'm not holding my breath. But anyway, it's given me an ideal opportunity to talk about checking your houses over for any wind damage that might have occurred. Because what I can guarantee that some of you here will have damages that you don't know about yet. Obviously, these photos here, you might have noticed these ones, but these are actually the right hand one was. It was in the town that I live, Gateshead. That happened last year. The whole roof came off. So it happens. Although the checks I'm going to talk about should actually be done on a yearly basis anyway, just to keep your properties in good order. Because keeping a check on your houses, it'll just prevent them from being affected by penetrating damp, which will happen sooner or later. So, and it's also unlikely that your tenants will inform you or your letting agent until there's an obvious damp problem, which then is going to cost you a lot more money than just rectifying the original issue. Yeah. So what I want to do is I'll just give you a simple checklist of defects that can be caused by strong winds. And these are things that you can detect yourself. It doesn't need, it doesn't require the knowledge of a surveyor, okay? And if you live in or near your investment area, you can, this is something you can really just do yourself. If you don't live there, but you're in direct contact with your tenants, you could ask them to do these specific checks for you. Or another option is just to talk to your letting agent and either get them to do your checks. You might have to pay for it, I suppose. Or for them to contact your tenant on your behalf and get them to check them out. Or again, if you've got a contact with a good local builder, ask him to give your house a once over. Because after all, a lot of us are buying distressed properties because that's what we do and that's how we add value. But unless we ourselves keep on top of any maintenance issues, as I say, and they will happen from time to time, then our own houses will then become distressed themselves. And then the costs start to escalate. So I'm just going to quickly run through half a dozen parts of a house that are vulnerable, and they're often damaged by strong winds or gales. And these are the ridges, tiles and slates, lead, rainwater systems, the verge, and the actual walls of a house. Yeah. So, and well, I as Debbie knows, I could talk for half an hour at least on each one of these topics. But don't worry, I'm not going to subject you to that. I've just got a few slides on each one and just tell you what to look out for.
I've had all of them.
We all have. And these could be, as I say, there could be houses that you already own, but also for houses that you may be viewing to buy as well. Yeah, because all of these defects will lead to rainwater getting into the property, which can then cause other defects inside, such as damaged ceilings, walls, floors, wet rot, dry rot, woodworm, and a number of other issues. So, first of all, just check the ridge tiles, the ridges, just to see if any are missing, simple, or if they've become dislodged. Also, check the cement pointing. That's what's used to fix the ridge in place, just to see if it's become loose or it's fallen out, because both of these will allow the ingress of rainwater, as I say, resulting in penetrating damp. If it's not rectified, and if these also sliding down the slope of the roof, they can also damage or block the gutter, which can then cause rainwater to flow over the top and down the outside of the walls, and this will eventually soak through the wall into the house inside the house, leading to other problems. So just check those over. Look for any missing tiles, slates. They can actually be easily missed or just not noticed by the person living there, partly because householders or tenants, they don't tend to look at the roof anyway. But sometimes the roof can't actually be seen from the garden or the road. Therefore, Sometimes you might even need to stand much further back. And I don't know, even get access to a neighbour's garden in order to get get a good view of that roof elevation. And if the roof is covered in clay or concrete tiles like this one here, then if any are missing, it's obvious because basically you've got holes in the roof. Yeah. However, if the roof's got slates on it, it might not be so obvious, because when slates, they break or they slip out of place, they say you might not notice it, or you might not think it's a problem either, because there still will be slates underneath there. But those slates underneath don't give enough protection against rainwater running through into the loft space below, because that slate there, it was there for a reason at the end of the day. Therefore, you need to study a slate roof much more closely to see if any have fallen out. Now, I've pointed at one missing one on the with the lower red arrow there. That's what you're looking for, but something you might not realize it's missing. The arrow at the top of the photo is actually showing a crack along the width of the slate. This can often happen when the slates are actually getting nailed on, and a hairline crack can form between the two nail holes. And it's something that quite often it can't be seen when it's put on. But years later, along with winds and what have you, the crack will get wider. And I can guarantee that this one here, it will break off with the next strong winds that come along. It'll just rip off. Excuse me. So if you're getting repairs done, then just ask the roofer to check over the rest of the roof as well for any hairline cracks or anything like that, because at the end of the day, you don't want to be paying to come back returning, you know, year after year. And often an easier way is to just to study the gutters for any slates that are lying in there, or even just look on the ground for any hole or broken slates or tiles, and then you know you've got a problem, even though you can't see it from below. Then if there's any lead work on the roof, just check carefully to see if it's still in place. And if you've got binoculars, then even better, because sometimes it's hard to tell. But lead is such a soft metal that if wind can get behind it or underneath it, it can easily just be torn away with strong winds. And the most exposed area on a roof with lead is around the base of the chimney stack. And it can quite easily be pulled away where the lead has actually been chased or stuck into the mortar joints. Wind can easily pull it away. And once rainwater gets behind the lead, at the junction of the tiles or the slates and the brickwork, if the rainwater can get behind there, there will be penetrating damp into the roof space. And if it's around the chimney, that water can then run down the chimney breast inside the house, into the house, and it can run all the way down to ground level. And I've seen many that have got the problems like that with the flashings around the chimney, and it's soaking all the way through to down to lower levels. Other areas, other lead areas, can be any flashings. So any junction of a roof will have lead, and anything that butts up against a wall or a change of roof pitch, there'll be lead there. Just check them all. In fact, I've shown the flashing on the right hand photo there. It isn't even lead. Okay, it's a type of bituminous flash band, if you like. Which is totally useless, it might last a year or two. Any strong wind will just tear it away from the building. But lead or flashband, and there's a few alternatives as well, that they're all susceptible to high winds. So make sure you keep a check on them. And then there's guttering and downpipes. Again, these can easily be ripped off during gales, or as I've just mentioned, tiles and slates sliding down the roof can knock them off or crack them or damage them. In fact, even if they look all intact and look fine, then check them for any blockages. Although this can, it's hard to, it really only be done when it's raining. Because I've mentioned before, rainwater, if it's raining, if it's in the block and they're running over the top of the gutter, rainwater running down the wall will cause penetrating damp inside the house. So if you can actually, and if you can actually see vegetation growing out of the gutter, like you can on the right hand photo there where I put the arrows to, you can see grass or whatever it is growing out of there, then that's a sure sign that if there's not already damp inside the house, then there soon will be if it's not cleared out. So just get a roofer. I don't know, Debbie says you can't, you're trying to struggle to get them, or a general builder just to clean them out. Or if your tenant has a window cleaner, then they often provide that service. You just ask them, and they'll do it. Just pay for it. It'll save you a lot of money. And if you've got high trees in the area of your house, then it's definitely a yearly maintenance project, because the leaves, the gutters and the downpipes will just get blocked up with the leaves from the trees. They'll get blocked up every year. Now, I don't know whether this is going to play or not, but this is a perfect example that leaves can block the downpipes as they are. I'll try playing this. It might play, it might not. Is that playing? No.
No. Jeff, can you come and play?
Oh, here it is. Is that playing? Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's no vegetation growing in this gutter here. And it's only apparent as a blockage because it's raining. And this is actually my house, okay? So it can happen to anybody and everybody. I'm no different. My house is no different than anybody else's. The leaves were actually stuck inside that offset bend there at the top of the downpipe. And it was pretty much impossible to know about until it's raining and then overflowing. So when it's raining is actually a perfect time to check out your gutters. And if it's not raining, when you go to check over your house, then look out for damp walls or darker discoloration of the walls. And that's a sure problem. That's a sure sign, should I say, that there's a problem with the gutters. Because this house here has a major problem with penetrating damp. And that's simply by not paying attention to the gutter. And rainwater downpipes, again, they can easily be dislodged out of place or ripped off altogether in gale force conditions. On the left-hand photo there, you can still see the gutter, the running outlet right at the top in the light grey or white colour there. But you can tell by the darker discoloration of the bricks that this downpipe has been missing for a long time, probably years. And all the cement mortar between the bricks, it's missing. This is because once it's soaked, they're soaking there, freeze thaw action during the cold winters will just simply pop the mortar out. And then this just allows water just to soak through the wall. That'll be pouring down this wall every time it rains. Inside here will be soaking. And on the right-hand video, I wonder if this one plays. I'll just see if the right-hand one plays. Yeah, Again, just a quick one there. I was passing it within Sunderland, that one. Actually, I was just passing it, and I was still in my car at the time because I was chucking it down. But that speaks for itself, that video there. You can see where it stopped at the bottom there. You can see all the damaged bricks and the missing cement and the mortar at the bottom of the wall there. Again, inside here will be soaked, okay? Which, well, it isn't rising damp, by the way, okay? Whatever your damp specialist says, but I'll don't get me started on that one. I'll keep that one for another day. And then there's the verge. This is where the verge is called. It's where the edge of the roof meets a gable wall, meets a wall, yeah? Check for cement falling out. Or if the house has got plastic dry verge, just make sure that none of it's missing, because it can easily get ripped off in high winds. And this can lead to water ingress. You get birds nesting in there, or wasps and bees making their nests. And the cost to fix this is minimal. It's next to nothing. The cost will be the labor costs, far more expensive than whatever the cost of any build materials. So it's again, they will let water into the house. And just check for check in a bit more difficult. I do understand, but I will cover this sort of somewhere down the line. Check brickwork for any bulges or cracks, especially gable ends, especially and if the house was built within the last 100 years. After the 1920s, they were built with cavity walls, which is, as you can see on these, we've got an internal brick wall, and then it's the external wall that's actually fallen away. There's actually something called wall ties are holding these two lettered bricks together, and they rot eventually. But I don't have time to explain in detail now. I'll cover all that in the future somewhere. But if the wall ties haven't been replaced, then this, what you can see here, it's possible to happen in extreme storms or gales. Now, and both of these houses here are owned by investors that I know, and it just happened in last year's gales. So don't just think it will happen to somebody else. Check your walls over. And as I mentioned at the beginning, all of these things I've been showing you can lead to penetrating damp, as that it'll be costly if it's left for any length of time. As I said, it can lead to damaged plaster, damaged timber, wet rot, dry rot, beetle infestation. So what I'm saying is just please check out your properties. They're your investments, just to make sure that they're not starting to degenerate. As all buildings will do over time if they're not maintained. Or again, perhaps just a few things to keep in mind when viewing houses. Just spend a bit of time checking over the outside and not just the inside. Get your viewings a bit early and just have a look at the outside before you go in. And that's again, that is just a very simple checklist of the six items I've mentioned tonight there. If you want, take a screenshot just to remind yourself of what they are, and just take it out with you when you're looking at houses.
And I think, Rob, as well, obviously this can save you. So if you can check your property, obviously we're not surveillance or anything like that, but you can easily take videos of the pictures, stick it on your WhatsApp group if you're in like a networking group. And the thing is, you can look at this before you get the survey, because if there's something obvious, then you're paying £400 and you know that's obviously going to come up on the survey. So it's like, you know, before you even get the survey, we can, you know, Rob hasn't had time to talk about wall ties, but this is a big one where properties are getting valued at zero if they need new wall ties. So, but roofs and guttering and stuff like that, and sometimes we can use it as a bargaining tool, because the guttering and that will cause some sort of damp. But if you can identify that, And then you're going in the vendor or they're letting their estate agent, and sometimes, bless them, they haven't got a clue, go, oh, it's riddled with damp. But actually, we can see a way to fix it through Rob, that actually that does need a full damp course. So all of Rob's knowledge, I wish I had all of Rob's knowledge in my head.
The amount of houses I go into saying that they need a damp course and they need tanking and all the rest of it when there's nothing to do with it. I've taken 15 or 20 minutes there. I can't go into very much in much detail here.
Yeah,
but it was just a reminder to tell people that all buildings deteriorate over time if they're not regularly maintained, you know.
And who actually looks outside? It's all about it needs a new kitchen, bathroom, and then they go, oh, it's 17 grand, bathroom, kitchen, carpet, this, that, and the other, but you don't really look at the outside. And how many people don't get it properly? And I'm going to ask Lee about this actually, they don't get a survey on the property. That £300 or £400. You know, that is your sort of
I'm seeing people thinking they're going to get a bargain by buying it at auction. I buy at auction and I see many that I'll go nowhere near, but people buy them and I haven't got a clue what the problems are. Spend some time looking over the outside. There's often some glaring things that are wrong with them, but I don't, when I go to a viewing, I don't, I'll be honest, I hardly look at the inside. I just look at the outside, and it's
on the inside, don't you? And you can take a video if you're not sure, and then when you get home, play the video, have a proper look. Is anything that you've missed? But it's a great tool, isn't it, Rob? Knowledge. And when I didn't look at the outside. It was all about...
I take photos all the time. I take loads of photos when I go to see a property and then I look at them later on. And I see things on the photo that I missed at the time because you've only got a 15-minute viewing.
Yeah.
So you haven't got time to check everything. So take photos. You can even chuck them through me as well, you know, and I'll have a once over. Not a problem there.
That's fantastic.
So well, that's done, Debbie. I hope it was useful anyway.
Yeah, very, very useful, especially with all this rains and horrible weather and everything. But roofs, honestly, there's that nail rot as well. That's coming up a lot on roofs. So nail rot. So do you need a new roof if you've got nail rot? Or is there another way to do it?
No, basically, once the nails start rotting, you need to replace the roof. However, that's not to say there's anything wrong with the slates,
right?
So you can reuse the slates.
So, and how much in general would that save you, Rob? If that had to take...
it's probably half your roof.
Right. So straight away there, Rob. Right, because I know a couple of people where they've got nail rot, but depends on the slates. The slates are all right, then that's a roof of 2.5 instead of 3, instead of 5. So that knowledge is like, you know, we haven't got that knowledge, but I thought I'd ask you that in any way, but thanks.
Yeah, bye. Well, actually, that's what I'm doing now, because I'm actually replacing my roof. It was supposed to start on Monday, but it hasn't stopped raining for the last 3 days. He's starting tomorrow, the next day, I think. Mm. And I'm taking the slates off mine because, I've got nail rot in mine, or nail fatigue, as it's known. I'm taking mine off. I'm replacing mine with a new slate, to be honest. But there's actually not a lot wrong with the slates. I'm actually going to sell the slates that I'm taking off. They're not going in the skip. I'll sell them. I'll get. I don't know. I'll get 30p each, and I'm taking 4,000 off. They'll pull me £1,000 back on my job.
Oh, lovely! You see, there's always a bit of money to be made.
Exactly.
That was brilliant. Has anybody got any questions for Rob quickly before we go on to finance? And Rob, did you have your email address there? Now, Rob's not going to answer all your emails, but we are going to be looking at doing something with Robin anyway. So
I haven't got it on here.
Do you want me to pop it in the chat?
You can do, yeah. You can do.
Jeff, can you pop Rob's email in the chat? Rob Kenny and Pop. So Jeff and Pop Rob's email in the chat, and then that was great. Any questions? Yeah. Are you all right, everybody? Just to have look after our properties. Fantastic. That's great. So I think you can stop sharing your screen there, Rob, if you know how to do that.
There's a red bar down here. I'll just try this.
Right. Okay then. Fantastic. That's brilliant. Right, so I think what we'll get on to now, we'll speak to, I was going to pick Lee's brains. If anybody's got any questions on legal stuff, please, we've got like legals, we've got finance, we've got Rob, Colin's on holiday, the planning gains expert. So any questions, just stick them in the box, honestly. We're all on the same boat. We've all got questions. We're investors looking at properties. It'll probably help a fair few people as well. So Lee. So Lee, if you bought a property like that, which came up with defects or it need wall ties and this, it had a survey done, but the survey didn't pick it up, what can we do about that? Is that what's the legal situation on that?
So obviously our advice is always to clients is to get a survey done, irrespective of what it is that you're doing, whatever it is you're buying, it doesn't matter. Obviously, as Rob's saying, the external part of it is equally as important as the internal. And I've seen some horror stories myself, but the in a conveyancing transaction, it's the onus is on the buyer to do all the relevant searches, surveys and inspections that they deem necessary before they proceed. And obviously the survey is a massive part of that. And I think, like you've all said, for the sake of £500-600, why would you not? When it could tell you that there's problems with the roof, it's problems with loads of different things. Obviously, me and Debbie were talking about this before we went live, but a lot of the surveys that I'm sure a lot of you have read, they do like to... Most of it's a back covering exercise for the surveyors, to be fair. They'll put all sorts of terminology and kind of threes and reds everywhere because, you know, they're not gas engineers, they're not electrical people, that kind of, you know, what they're called, electricians. So they can't necessarily make those comments on it. So that's why we report to clients on the basis of do your own electrical check, do your own gas check. I have had a property that was, it was about 3 years ago now, where we got given a gas safe from the seller. It went through fine. And it transpired that the gas safe that was provided was fraud. It was fraudulently obtained. It was just somebody had created one that looks exactly as it should online. And nothing thankfully happened. You know, the clients were safe. But that's why we say to clients, get your own specialists to do your own checks and don't rely on what's being given to you, because, you know, it's just not something that you should be doing. You're all spending tens and especially hundreds of thousands of pounds on these properties. There's no difference of whether you're living it in yourself or you're going to rent it out. It's still a lot of money and it's still an asset that you should be looking to protect, in the sense of do your due diligence. Don't rely on other people, because it's really important. And if you don't do it, there is very little recourse, unless it's misrepresentation and the sellers have specifically misrepresented to you. There's very little recourse that you can have.
Yeah. So how can you find, I know there's a property that we've been looking at. There's tenants in, they've had an EICR done. There's no way that those electrics would pass that. So obviously it's a dodgy certificate. Plus the CP12. So it's about just going out and getting your own done before you buy it. So if we bought it with the dodgy certificates, then we can't go back to the seller and go, look, this was fraud, you've given us this, and it nothing goes
back. Well,
you
potentially could. But again, you have to, like, when it comes to litigation and going down that route, you have to outweigh the cost of that versus the cost of actually just having them done yourself. You know, 70 quid for a gas safe, or, you know, 70 quid for an EICR, whatever the cost of it is, that's going to far be more beneficial to you than to spend £10,000 on a litigious claim because of what's happened as a result of that. So I would be always thinking on the opposite. Don't always think, oh, well, if it goes wrong, I can claim. Think of, let's not make it go wrong and get it done properly to start with. You know, when I'm reviewing surveys, I am quite a nebby individual, so I do read them. I get pictures of the property up. I do go to the far end of a fart with stuff because it can tell you a lot of stuff. So most of the level two, level three service have a section for legal people, you know, legal advisors to look at. And a lot of people just look at that. If there's nothing in it that is any significance, and they just carry on. Whereas what it doesn't necessarily say, or it depends on the surveyor, it doesn't sometimes tell you that there's been a chimney breast removed and that requires building regs. So I do look at it for that sort of stuff, you know, roof replacements, chimney breast removals, other stuff that's contained within the main body of it, which a lot of solicitors just simply won't check and caveat the fact that we're not surveyors, we can't comment. Well, that in itself is true, but that doesn't mean you can't read the rest of the report. And it's just about giving clients and giving you guys as much information and knowledge as you can to make that commercial decision whether you proceed or not.
So do you know when you get some lenders, which Wayne will vote for, I hope, they just do a desktop. So if they're doing a desktop, how can they, you can't really sort of see if there's anything sort of...
No, and you shouldn't be relying on what the lender does anyway, whether it's a desktop or they actually go out and do they're very brief surveys anyway, they're not in depth, but that's always for the lender's benefit. You can never rely on what the lender's survey is anyway, even if they did do one. So the only way you're going to have any protection is getting somebody like Rob to do his checks on it for you. And if needed, go to a full structural if you have to, depending upon what Rob might say in terms of his visualized look at the property, and only go by what you're getting. Don't ever rely on things that other people are giving to you, because you can fall foul. I had a client that was buying a property, didn't get a survey despite several times we've reported to her and told her to do it. And the floor fell through because there was rotting wood underneath the floorboard. And for what she said, I did think that's a creaky floorboard. But, you know, sometimes a creaky floorboard isn't just because it's an old, really cute property that's been there for donkey's years. It's because there's something more untoward going on underneath.
And do you know what you said there, Liam? We were reading a survey today, and it was from Fleet. I'm going to pick Wayne's brains on it tomorrow. So they basically said they had values this property of 100K, right? Now, within their statement, they said this valuation we haven't had went off any comparables in the area. We haven't done any due diligence, blah, blah, blah. They said this. So this valuation was for, as you say, for the lenders, not for the for what it was. So I'm reading through this, we've highlighted, I'm going to do something about, like, put it on somewhere. But I'll say, my God, we know that property is worth 125 grand. The comparables are there, everything's on there. But for some reason, Fleet One evaluated are 100K. Now, that's caused, you know, so, and it says it does not go off any of the comparables within that area. And it's got loads of stuff, and I'm going like, well, what's the point? But actually, it's just for them. It's what they feel that property is worth.
Profile as well, you have to remember. Yeah. So if their risk profile for that particular street, that particular area, that particular geographical location, and they're quite overrun with buy-to-lets in that area, then they'll just say that it's not. They must be just saying that their risk profile for that is just not something that they're willing to lend on. You know, I've had clients that have not been able to get a mortgage with mainstream lenders. And I can't even remember the terminology that it is, but they said this word, which basically meant that for that particular area, and this was a new build actually, but for that particular development, they're basically given too many mortgages. So if something were to go horrifically wrong, they're leveraged too much in that particular area, so they won't lend anymore. Yeah. So, and again, that's just that particular lender. And they ended up going with a higher mortgage with a different lender because they weren't, I can't remember the term, but it was a funky term that I'd never heard of. But when I looked into it more, it just basically meant that they had too many mortgages already on that development and they wouldn't lend, full stop.
And this is why this happens, like, in your buy-to-let area. So in Benwell, there was, like, when there was loads of properties getting sold, they called it overexposure or something like that. But anyway, they were buying them with bridging, but then the lender was just refusing, so we don't have to tell you why. But it was because there was, I think it was, what bank was it? Anyway, they had too many mortgages, buy-to-let mortgages within that area. So that was why. Nothing to do with the property itself. There's too much lending. And this is what people don't understand when they're getting bridging loans, and you need a really good broker to give you that exit lending where they're doing the research and everything. It's like, honestly, it's like getting a good broker and legals is absolutely massive. And Wayne, we always say to Wayne, Wayne's what's our exit on this? What choice of lenders have we got? So the power of your power team is absolutely phenomenal. And Wayne has helped loads of people out in the shit, basically.
You're almost working backwards, aren't you? Like, start with the exit first and go back.
Yeah. So Wayne, sorry, we've been talking about finance and we've left you out. So Wayne, so if you're looking at bridging and development finance, and would you always say, like, get a full survey on this property, and then with your bridging lenders, how does it actually work? Because if you've got wall tile failure, you're not going to be able to get a mortgage probably at zero to nilch. So what sort of lending is out there at the minute for us to buy these properties, as long as we know what's wrong with them, we know what the cost to put on them.
Are you happy for me to share my screen?
I certainly am, if you can do it with some glitches.
Lovely. Are we sharing my screen there?
You are sharing your screen, yes.
Perfect. Lee, you're absolutely right. Exit is key. And I thought I was going to overrun with my time slot, but one of these pages really honed in exit, exit, exit. You know, and Lee says, you know, you start at the end. Bridging is such a versatile tool, but frankly, so long as you've got a beating heart, they'll lend to you and they'll lend on the property. And that's great, you know, for the acquisition, it's brilliant, but, you know, doesn't bode well for when you come to the exit. And then, you know, your experience level doesn't meet the requirements of the lender, your income, the property, the condition, the configuration, the construction. You know, you've really got to hone in on that exit. But guys, good to see everyone. For those of you that don't know me, my name's Wayne and I'm the Managing Director of DMI Finance. Kind of in keeping with the theme here, we're obviously talking about structural defects. Lee and Debbie have been doing the same. And I think the big thing is, short of you perhaps buying a property with a keys undertaking or a long stop completion, so exchanging, doing the works and then securing a normal mortgage, or buying a property cash or financing against another property to buy the property you're buying, ultimately bridging finance is the only option here. And I thought I'd just spend maybe 5-10 minutes just honing in on bridging finance in a little bit more depth, guys, because some of you, of course, will be familiar with it, but you might not be familiar with how versatile and how open the product is. And Dev's wanted me just to come on and talk to you about a couple of different scenarios with bridging. So guys, you're all familiar with a bridge. What's it used for? Well, it's used to buy a property that's not livable, not habitable, perhaps a property that you need to complete on very quick. Great for flips, great for refurbs, because buy-to-let lenders require the property to be immediately lettable. So if the property is not immediately lettable when you buy it, you can't get a normal mortgage. That might sit quite obvious with some of you, but might not be obvious with those of you that haven't yet started to invest. Clearly, with a lender that, as I say, will lend where you've got a beaten heart and they'll lend to you, there are going to be some cons to it. Most obvious con is interest rates. It's clearly higher interest rates than any form of long-term finance, guys, but it is, as I say, very, very short-term. Unlike on a standard mortgage where your solicitor will act for you and also act for the lender, it's seldom the case with bridging lenders. With bridging lenders, your solicitor will almost always act for you, with the lender appointing their own solicitor to act for them, you guessed it, at your cost. So it's just understanding the costs that are associated with bridging. That's not always the case, but it's almost always the case. And then there's the point that because bridging is much more expensive and the monthly payments would be much more expensive, unless you can evidence that you can make those monthly payments, guys, the lenders will likely want to deduct those payments from the advance, meaning that ultimately on day one, you're actually going to get a little bit less. Now, as I say, it's very versatile. Very rarely will there be a scenario where the applicant's not eligible for a bridge or where the property is not eligible for a bridge. In almost all scenarios that we bridging lenders will lend to you, it's all a matter of cost, it's all a matter of risk. And bear in mind, you know, as Lee says, they're assessing their risk, not your risk. You know, that's the key thing with mortgages, with bridging. They're not really concerned. They're concerned in the case of the worst case, the worst eventuality, when they have to repossess the property. Will they be able to? Will they be able to sell it for the amount or more than they've lent against it? That's their assessment, not necessarily your ability to refinance away and for you to make money. That's not their key. In terms of the pros, though, guys, as I say, it's very versatile. They'll accept angel deposits, which some buy-to-let lenders are a little bit uncomfortable with. Many buy-to-let lenders are uncomfortable with. Just regularizes the situation. Bridging lenders are generally happy with it. Vendor loan deposits. A vendor wants to lend you some money for a period of time for you to acquire that property. That's a possibility. Distressed sales are accepted. Far less focus on experience. So if you're an investor just getting into property, don't yet own your own home, don't own any property, then this can circumvent those requirements and give you that experience. And then very, very fast turnaround times. Certainly not the average case, but we've completed on bridging finance within a couple of days. You know, I would say normally, I know, pretty good. I was quite happy with it, Debs. Generally speaking, you know, it's going to be far longer than that. It's going to be shorter than a mortgage. But you can, if the pressure's really on, complete very, very quickly. Guys, in terms of bridging products, this is where it gets very interesting. I would say that there's more than one type of bridge, and people think they know bridging, but what they know is the general bridge. But really, there are kind of three or four or five different types of bridging. And I've kind of listed them here, guys. So, you know, you have a purchase bridge, which is the traditional bridge that you'll all be familiar with, which is where a lender lends you 75% perhaps of the purchase price or the value, whichever the lower. They're not lending you to do any the cost of works. It's just a traditional bridge where a lender lends you 75% of the purchase. That's the traditional purchase bridge. But you also have a market value bridge. And so if you're legitimately, guys, buying a property for less than it's worth, you're buying a property for £100,000, but the valuer agrees that it's worth £120,000. And the key here is that the valuer has to agree to it. And that is the key here, because try and get a valuer when he knows you're buying it for 100 to say it's worth a penny more than 100, and it's very difficult to do. So there's got to be a bit of subterfuge. Perhaps, you know, you certainly don't want to be highlighting to the valuer that you're buying it for 100, because you're going to end up with a £100,000 valuation. But if the valuer comes in, values it at 120, then in that scenario, because these market value bridging lenders were actually lending 75% of the value of the property, then you could end up with 90 to 100% of the purchase price of the property. So a really, really good proposition, guys. Not offered by all bridging lenders, but really, really useful. End value bridging, similar ilk, but you don't have to be buying a property for more than it's worth. It has to be worth what you're buying it for. The lender will want a schedule of works to understand what you're going to do to the property, and the valuer will be tasked at valuing the property now and based on the assumption of the works that you're going to carry on. So you're buying it for 100, spending £20,000 on it, the valuer can see that, and he comes back and says, okay, after the works, it's going to be worth £150,000. The lender will lend up to 75% of the end value of the property, giving you on day one, 80 to 85% of the purchase price. Again, really, really good. And these are bridging products that most people don't know about. Most people, and there may be a cause, there may be a reason, you know, if you've got the money yourself, don't borrow it from somebody else. You know, it's not earning you the amount it's going to cost you on a bridge in the bank. So, of course, it's cheaper to use your own money than bridging. But if you don't have it, these are really versatile tools to enable you to continue to buy it. Then the last product there, the real product, would be the refurb and conversion bridge, which is much more about perhaps significant refurbishments. You know, it might be a bungalow where you're taking the lid off and going up. It might be commercial to residential conversions. It might be a house into multiple flats. These sort of facilities where you're looking to carry out major refurbishments, there are lenders, bridging lenders, that will lend you 75% of the purchase price and up to 100% of the cost of the works, plus the finance costs, plus the funding to cover the interest payments. Really, really versatile product, guys. And then, of course, there's a bridge. You can add in additional property. So you might say, okay, well, I've got another buy to let with a bit of equity in that. I'm loath to refinance it because it's on a cracking rate and rates aren't as good at the moment. So I'll take a second charge against that property, as well as a first charge on a normal purchase bridge, enabling me to raise 100%. And because I've really truly brought the loan to value bracket down, I might be able to get a better interest rate accordingly. So guys, you know, I think you'll all see, you know, many of you won't have used the market value bridge, end value bridge, refurb or conversion, won't have brought other properties to the mix. You know, bridging is super, super versatile.
Yeah, and it's important that all your costs in, isn't it, as well, for the bridge. You're upfront with people. I know some lenders and brokers, what I've seen in the past, and as a property sourcer, we're not. We refer most people away, but some people have their own broker. We're not in control of the finance, the cost of your money, anything like that. And people are coming back and it costs ridiculous as amount of money because they haven't had all of the figures up front from getting entering the bridge to exiting the bridge and the monthly cost. So, yeah, it's been...
You're absolutely right. I mean, if you look at that, everyone here is going to say, well, I'll go for a refurb and conversion bridge. They're going to lend me all the money to do the works. Well, I made very clear there that it was really only beneficial for properties that you're doing significant works on because there are costs associated with it, because those payments, as I put at the bottom there, are provided in stage releases. So if you're spending £100,000, they give you £20,000 now, 2 months later, £20,000, so on and so forth. Each time they release that money, they might want a monitoring surveyor to go out. They might want a QS to go out. They might want a valuer to go out. Every time they release the money, there'll be costs associated with it. So if you're spending £15,000 on refurb and they're going to charge you £1,000 for the valuer to come out and release that £15,000, once you've spent the £15,000, it's kind of futile. It's a pointless exercise and what a good broker should be doing. And that's why, in truth, many do go for the purchase bridge, because in many occasions where the works are minimal and you're going to complete the work quickly and you have the money to do the refurb, those other products are kind of additional, you know, surplus to requirements, really. But there will be many instances where they'll be very beneficial. And as a broker, you know, we understand you, we understand what you're buying, we understand the properties you own, we understand where you are now, where you want to get to. And we should be focusing on the end goal, as Lee says, and working back. We shouldn't just be saying, okay, let's get them into a bridge and worry about getting them out later.
Yeah.
In terms of headline rates then, guys, and that would be it from me. This is where the market sits currently. So, you know, all of these rates have come down. I can't recall when the next inflation release is now. I can't recall, in truth. It's later, maybe the 20th. It would be Wednesday, the week after next. Wednesday, 24th, is it? We'll see the next inflation release. Likelihood is it would drop a bit further. I think I was at an event recently with a chap from the Bank of England, and he was suggesting that they probably wouldn't see base rate drop in May, but they thought it might drop back 0.25% in June, with a further 0.25% reductions by the end of the year. So, you know, things are looking up. Rates are coming down, not by any significant margin just yet, guys, but competition's there, and competition will drive these rates naturally down. They all want to be, you know, creating enough as of a frenzy around their own products to keep their business busy. But they're aware rates sit now, so not too unattractive. You know, 2-year product starting at high threes, as you can see there, 5-year product starting at low to mid fours. Now, of course, guys, these are the most attractive products in the market in terms of interest rate. It's just there as a kind of barometer because it's a smoke and mirror scene with lenders. They'll give to you in one hand and take in another. So, you know, these products won't be the products with the cheapest arrangement fees for sure. But it's good to see some headline rates, you know, starting with low fours for a 5-year fixed.
And Wayne, how busy is the buy let market at the minute? I mean, for bridging, for mortgages, is it quite a busy market at the minute? Are people still buying?
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely around tough. I think, look, it goes to a degree through peaks and troughs, and perhaps we see cycles of what type of business we receive. You know, we have been receiving lots more product switch requests. So people have come to the end of their 4-year fix, 5-year fix, and people just say, okay, well, I just want a new product with my existing lender. Now that the wider market is hotting up a little more, people are saying, actually, well, you know, I need to consider, you know, actually, you know, can I get more money from refinancing the property? Can I get a better rate from refinancing it with another lender? In many instances, they can now. Similarly, we're getting lots of purchases. If we go back to, you know, perhaps end of 2022, you know, so a year and a half ago, we saw so much bridging because that was when buy-to-let rates had really started to increase. Buy-to-let rates went up to something like 7%. Rents hadn't yet followed suit. And, you know, I guess many of our buy-to-let investors were saying, well, what can I do? Those numbers don't work. I'm not, you know, as time has gone on, those rent increases have compensated for a lot of the increase in rates, haven't they? So yeah, buy-to-let is certainly hotting up for us.
Right, and just a very quick one because I'm running a little bit over and we're usually very quick on our times, but that's been absolutely fantastic. Fantastic around 5 minutes. So I put on Facebook that this lovely tenant was looking for a property because the landlord was selling. So it was a 4-bedroom bungalow in Hornley Spring. 4 bedrooms are like rock and horse shit, excuse the French, right? You just can't get 4-bedroom properties. So we did a little bit. So I've spent about 45 minutes on this with texts and a couple of calls. Haven't been to meet the tenant, haven't been to meet the vendor, but just explained for them what to do. So people wanted to know a little bit more about it. So what's happened is the landlord has agreed that the tenant pays £1,000 a month rent for 20 months. The rent was £750 a month. They put it up, but what they're going to do is at the end of the 20 months, they're going to use that money to gift back to the tenant to actually buy the bungalow. So the bungalow's probably, it's been valued about 120,000, 110, 120. She's mortgageable. They both got good jobs. They just didn't have the deposit. So they're absolutely ecstatic. So Wayne, is this something that is allowed? So obviously I am going to put this tenant buyer in touch with you. It, obviously, you know, if she's all singing and dancing with her credit rating and all of that, it's a couple, yeah. Man and wife. Is this something that is legal and that can happen?
Yeah, absolutely it is. I mean, it's much like buying, in this instance, what it would be a concessionary purchase. So much like buying a property, me buying a property from a family member, you know. So long as there's a legitimate reason for the discount that you're receiving, lenders are happy with it. And with a concessionary purchase, what they're doing is they're saying, okay, well, you're buying it, easy numbers. You've put £20,000 into this, you know, over a sustained period of time. You know, in your eyes, you're buying it for £80,000, but it's worth £100,000. What the lender will say is that they will lend on the basis that the £20,000 equity in the property is the applicant's deposit. So that effectively is enabling the client to borrow an 80% loan to value mortgage on a property worth £100,000, putting in no deposit of their own, on the basis that the equity in the property, you know, the money the difference between the value and the amount it's being sold for is the client's deposit. So perfectly normal, just like a family concessionary purchase. If you're the tenant of the property, it is perfectly acceptable for your landlord effectively to sell that property to you for less, with the equity being the deposit. No issue with it whatsoever.
That's fantastic. And I think Colin's asked, has the landlord got a mortgage? So we thought she was selling because she had a mortgage and obviously interest rates. I don't know all the ins and outs because I didn't meet up with him, but it looks like actually she just wanted rid of the property. She's sort of retained, she wants rid of the property. And it's quite a quirky property. I mean, a four-bedroom bungalow. When people want a bungalow, they want to downsize maybe to a two-bedroom and stuff like that. So I think this is a good option for her, because, you know, they've both been married before. They've got four kids, two adults. So, and that's where they want to be. So, but that's allowed. And on the legal side, Lee, everything all right with that? That's something that you could work with the, you know, the landlord selling to the tenant?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, our first concern would always be, is the lender aware and is the lender happy with it? And if they've already gone through that kind of process of notifying the lender in their application, we would either expect to see something in the mortgage conditions to say that they're aware of the concessionary purchase, or we would notify them ourselves. There might be some questions in around the solvency side of it, just to make sure that the landlord's not doing it to remove the asset from their creditors, because it is, although it's concessionary, sometimes it can be looked at, depending on the lender, that it is that undervalue side of it, even though it's not technically, because you're still buying it for the value. And then we would just look at the CML handbook, or what used to be called a CML handbook, the finance handbook, should I say, as to the particular lender's requirements in relation to a concessionary purchase, because it might be that we have to do bankruptcies on the seller as well as our client when it comes to it. Like I said, they might want a specific indemnity policy just to give them that added protection, but it's absolutely fine and we see it all the time.
That's fantastic. Has anybody got any more questions? It is quite a massive, we're usually very strict on these because I know you've got kids to put to bed, you've just gone in from work, you've got to have your tea, you've got to do where, you know, you've got stuff to do, but always, always very valuable. And we've got the same, we've got these Zooms every month, which is brilliant, and we've got our experts on. So, right, if nobody's got any questions, then can we just thank our teams for all of the expert and the information and the golden nuggets. And it's good night from him, me. It's good night from all of us. Trying to do a little bit like the two Ronnies, but never work, but never mind. Have a great evening, everybody, and see you next month. Okie dokie.
Night, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye, everybody. Ta-da.
Thanks.